Welcome to the Fight for Sight podcast. We are talking to people from all areas of life, science, policy, and all of the other things that you can consider that impact the lives of blind and visually impaired people. We will be talking to leaders that shape policy and government. We will be talking to leaders of organisations that have shown in their own lives as blind people genuine prospects for success. And we will be talking to those people whose everyday experience is extraordinary and shapes our understanding of what is truly possible for those of us that live with visual impairment, and also our friends, colleagues and allies that help us to create what we believe is a new movement to start to achieve genuine prospects for opportunity and change in the lives of visually impaired people. Welcome to the latest edition of the Fight for Sight podcast. Really pleased today to be joined by Stephen White, trustee and co-founder of Cure Russia. I'm somebody that's lived with retinitis pigmentosa all of my life, and during that time I've met a number of people that have Usher's syndrome, which for those people that don't know has parallels with the retinitis pigmentosa inherited eye condition, which basically relates to the degeneration of the retina, but is also intimately connected and relates to hearing loss as well, which often occurs first for someone that has Usher's syndrome before indeed the sight loss follows it on. So it's a really, I think, interesting conversation I'm looking forward to with Stephen today, to talk about the way that that syndrome works for patients and people living with it, but also what Cure Usher are setting out to do and what our hopes might be for addressing the treatment of Usher's syndrome, but I think also the potential of life. Probably a bit longer introduction that I would have normally done, Stephen, but I'm sort of really fascinating to have you here. So I wonder if you could start perhaps by telling us a bit about your journey and what the aspirations of Cure Usher are, how it came together.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, firstly, thanks very much for inviting me in. It's a real honour, this, and I'm kind of a bit of imposter syndrome going on here. I'm kind of, what am I doing here? A guy from Preston who's, you know, suddenly found himself getting the tube from King's Cross over here is mind-blowing. So, yeah, thank you for this chance to talk to you and to your listeners. So, yeah, Cure Usher, crikey. It's basically born on the back of a sense of frustration and underrepresentation, I think. Discussing before about how this all comes about, that the people that live with Usher syndrome are really quite adept at navigating many worlds, many scenarios. They're handed a tough gig. For the most part, I mean, Usher syndrome is divided into three main types. I'm not going into the details, it's boring, but it's three main types. But the thing that connects it all is that they're mainly born with a hearing loss. Sometimes it's profound, sometimes moderate. So for the first sort of half of your life, you're negotiating your life with a hearing loss, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's, you know, Joanne has always maintained that.
So this is Joanne, your co-founder at
Of course, Cure Russia, yes, yeah, Joanne White, or Joe Milne, as you might know. Yeah, she born, lived quite happily, and then to then experience the RP side of things, alongside having a hearing loss, it's quite a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge for anybody, just to deal with one or the other, but for both, this is a tough gask. What we found, well, what Joanne has found, is that a lot of people across the professional world, the public, don't really have a proper appreciation, a proper sense of what Usher syndrome is, and how to approach it, how to best support people. We established Cure Usher late 2018 on the back of that sort of frustration and the need to really set things right in a way. There are services out there, of course there are. There's a lot of people doing a lot of great work. But we just felt that it just wasn't quite enough specifically directed at Usher syndrome, the awareness of it at every turn. And this has been borne out by the people that have got back to us, that we've connected with and contacted through establishing the charity and the campaign, the story of us that's running, is that people just are still self-advocating. They're still spending the first 5 or 10 minutes of each consultation with a GP in just explaining what it is that they are experiencing, what it is, what Usher syndrome is.
I mean, it's really kind of interesting seeing you and Joe looking to form, you know, an organisation and, you know, recommend people go to the Cure Usher website. We'll put a link in the notes for this podcast. But it, you know, it kind of looks and feels serious. You know, it's not, doesn't feel like a kitchen, you know, I was going to say a kitchen sink project, a kitchen table project.
That's right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think I mean, I'm someone living with retinitis pigmentosa, mm-hmm. through pure accident and chance 15 years ago, ended up working in the sight loss sector because a job came up. And yeah. Now I find I spend a lot of my time, you know, in the process of going blind. I'm registered blind now, mm-hmm. and also talking about the process professionally, mm-hmm. as well. So it'd be interesting to know what kind of that thought was for yourself and Joe to kind of do something that perhaps wasn't, you know, just about Joe's Usher, but was about people with Usher, you know, in the community. What sort of that stimulated you to do something more than living with it yourself?
So. I think some people have got an amount of human spirit that just overflows, and I know it sounds a bit fluffy and a bit Hollywood and all that, but it's the case. Why do we do these things? I don't know. I care. For 10 years, I was a frontline rapid response paramedic in the Durham area, in the northeast of England. Mm. You know, I was flung about the countryside in a BMW X1 with a bag, some drugs, and a bottle of oxygen. You know, they're right, off you go and help some people out. So you're there bouncing around the countryside, you know, sorting things out, making things better for people. Why does anybody do this stuff? It's out of that sense that, you know, we're all human. We are all the same. Zoom out, people. You know, it's not about being, I am this and you are that, and you must go and, you know, you must go and seek this support from this person, and this is the way you do it, and that's that. You know, you've got to trust in the human spirit. You've got to accept that people really do want to help, and there's a lot more of that about than not. On the train down here yesterday, we were delayed in Newcastle, and the train guard said, there's no way I'm letting this lady walk the full length of the train with her bags. Just wait here and we'll get this sorted out first. Didn't have to do that. It was, you know, it was lovely. And that was just because it was obvious that Joanne had a sight loss. There she was with the mobility cane with the red stripes on, denoting that she had a hearing loss. She might not have understood what those red stripes meant, but the fact was, she cared enough to think, no, I'm not going to let this woman do this. Let's wait. Let's make this right. And I think that if you have the chance to do something more than that, if you are given this opportunity to really feel like you're making a difference, and damn it, to actually make a meaningful difference, wouldn't you want to do that? Of course you would.
I mean, it's you know, please don't think for a minute, Stephen, I was in any way challenging your motivations. It's just kind of, it's the extent that I think those of us, and there are many of us, you know, in our, in Fight for Sight Vision Foundation, our organisation, somebody makes an application for a social impact grant, mm-hmm. every step of that process from the minute the grant arrives, there are people with visual impairment, mm-hmm. in our staff and volunteers.
Yeah.
That are part of all of that process. And it's kind of a question I'm asking myself a lot, that time and time again I'm seeing people with a will to volunteer, contribute, mm-hmm. whether they've got eye conditions and Usher with hearing loss as well, mm-hmm. themselves, or whether it's their family or colleagues, that, mm-hmm. there's a real, you know, there's no shortage of kind of human enterprise, I would call it, to try and, you know, to try and help. And and it interests me as well. So I often, and I know talking to, I was in, I've got a house by the coast, and there's a network of people down there that got visual impairment who meet, which I'm going to pretend is a support group, but it is actually
really
it's
not.
and there's folk week down there, and, you know, whatever. So it's a busy time, but it was just kind of really interesting that the kind of stories from people about how the public kind of can often have a will to want to support and help, but sometimes are just confused about what's going on with sight loss. They don't really know how to do it. Like, I always remember the guy, I mean, I've lost some weight recently because I got diabetes, which is probably going to make me healthy, just like sight loss is making me a decent person. But a guy, when I was bigger, trying to lift me onto a bus, you know, and you think, wow. Just because he wanted to help, you know.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, it's a long way round to me asking kind of a further question, because with ushers, I think you've not just got the sight loss, there's the hearing loss in tandem. And you mentioned that, sure, Joe's cane has red stripes on, which, mm-hmm, I think denotes hearing loss as, sure, well as, you know, yep, visual impairment.
And I just, red checkers on a guide dog's harness.
Uh-huh.
It's the same thing.
So I didn't know that, and I'm a guide dog owner.
There you That's, go.
So I've learned something.
And this today. That drills right down. The key thing is awareness. We're still, there's a lot of this, there's an analogy that I use, Maslow's triangle of needs. So at the very bottom, are you safe? Have you got shelter? Are you fed? And then what have you got something to do? Have you got a hobby? And then what's the very last section at the very top is what just you want to do? What's your thing? And this is the thing about a lot of what's gone not wrong. It's a difficult thing to say, isn't it? Without getting myself into proper trouble. But there's been a lot of it's everybody's gone for the very top thing first without going for the strategy, without getting everything done right on the way up. And we've just left with a vacuum. We just, you bounce to the top and everybody for 10 minutes goes, oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, look, let's do that. And then it's gone. And there's nothing, because it's a bit like, it's awful, but how else do you do it? You've got to give your own examples, haven't you? When a social worker or whoever it is comes to assess you in your own home, They're there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. And they're just there, and they've got to, you've got to give them a sense of what your life is like in those 20, 30 minutes. And then they make notes of this, and then they go home. They drive off. I can't do that. I've got RP, I can't. You know, they leave that environment. They sharp forget what it's like. I can't forget what that's like. I have to make sure that everything's right, and you know, do what me and Joanne do as a couple. I certainly don't wrap her in cotton wool, but there's certain things that we do together that just is that's my way of supporting Joanne. I live with that 24/7. These people, you know, these people, cracky, other people, it's terrible. That, you know, other people that don't have any connection to it have no sense of what it's like, and that's the challenge. Is to not, you know, not browbeat people and to tell them this is how it is and that's what this is, but is to gently but disruptively and determinately tell them what this is like and make that memorable. Give them something that they will remember. And this is partly, like you said before, about the, you know, the whole thing with CureUsher has been, you know, it's still just two people in a kitchen in Gateshead smashing this out. We've been very lucky insofar as we've connected with a few people in London, in Manchester, that have helped us along our path. And they've especially the healthcare communications company that we've managed to secure some work with, they've boosted our campaign. And it's disruptive. It's, you know, the story of us is your emblem. Is that, well, what's that? It makes you stop and go, what's that? Mm. And then, and that in that in itself is it's like road signs. They're there, then they're that shape and that colour for a reason, because you go, what's that? All right. And it sticks. And that's the challenge, is to raise that awareness, to bring this into the public domain and normalise it. It's not going to go away. These things, you know, we're way away from that. We can't solve all of that. So just for now, let's get everybody aware of what this is first. And then it's like that classic thing, you've got to connect the donor to the cause, otherwise nothing's going to get right. Nothing. You're not going to connect with people if they don't know what it is. You know, nobody's going to sponsor you if you give them this, you know, weird Belgium-sounding Flemish name to something. They're going to go, wow, right, okay. And then they're going to forget it. You know, the challenge is to drill this right down and get it into the public conscious, and that's what.
And it's so, I mean, it's so 100% in Fight for Sight Vision Foundation, connection to cause is everything. So And exactly, it's really interesting with you, Stephen, kind of working on a startup and your passion for what you're setting out to do and the personal aspects of it are really palpable and admirable. But that simple moment there when you talked about connection to cause, I 100%, you know, recognise. And I think that the, certainly in terms of the donor environment, but I think also beyond donors, I think in connecting to the kind of clinical world and the clinical research world, that authenticity, that connection to what the health system would call patient and so-called community or whatever, one person with several names, right?
That's right.
But there's something I think meaningful and that is, I was going to say modern, but it's such an old-fashioned word, but, you know, that is of the now, which is very, very much about charitable causes being established for, you know, definitive routes to impact and to get things done, you know, as distinct from causes that may... You know, in some areas, and thankfully it's largely in the past now, but people would you know, trade off horror to raise money. And then, you know, I'm not in any way disrespecting their causes. But I think for those of us, and it'd be interesting your thoughts of this from the point of view of, you know, Usher being part of family life for you, but then also, you know, a cause that, that, you know, that you're pursuing. We, our sorts of organisations don't want to disproportionately telegraph hardship. Because I, in my view... we're aware that the community that are experiencing sight loss or sight loss and hearing loss in the case of ushers are receiving those messages in the same way than the, as the potential donors. And we could have end up making things by trying to do good, doing something that's bad. And I so what we're trying to do here really is make sure that we trade in the truth and that every step we take is a step towards
I mean, impact. That's exactly it, isn't it? Nothing about this is really comfortable. Nothing about it. And I think that that's... it's a really tough pitch, man. It's really tough. Well, how, which way you can, you know, you aggrandize it, you try and make it nice and playful and all the rest of it. The fact is... I'm really trying not to swear. The fact is that you can't see very much and you can't hear very much.
Yeah.
You know, and...
It's tough.
It's tough. You know?
I was thinking on the way in today, I mean, travelled on a train with a guide dog, which is a real, you know, he's my luxury product. You know, it's not, you know, it's like, you know, it's life-changing like that. But even then, in working with a dog, you know, I'm routinely, you know, sound is an asset for me in a number of environments, you know. And, you know, I'd encourage everyone listening to this to, you know, to think about what it means and, you know, what it would mean for them. You know, to be confronted with that.
Sure.
Do you find, since getting involved with Cure Usher, that your... What's the response been like from the community of people with ushers or equally the medical world? Have people given you time?
Definitely. I think it's very much a find your tribe moment. There are... It's like anything. There are people that will connect with your way of thinking that will 100% get behind you and think, yes, that's it. We're, you know, it's that moment where you sort of turn around and you offer your hand and say, we're going this way, are you coming? A lot of people have connected with us and have said that that's exactly what we want. For some parts of it, that, you know, a lot of people have got a support network already. They've got great families. You know, like I was saying before, you know, the human spirit, it's there. You know, people support each other. They really do. It's just about more awareness in certain areas. And that's what we've found particularly, is that people are okay. They're okay, really. They've had to be. You can't just wake up and forget. Like we were saying before, you can't just drive off. I'm living with this, but I'd rather it not be there. Thank you very much. Can you do something about this? And I think that offer of, you know, it's not like the, you know, a cure-all. We can't just, you know, bob in and go, boop, there it is, it's gone. We're on the way to doing it. This is tough work. The whole world of, I mean, you'll know all about this, of, you know, trying to secure grants and funding for research, the never-ending void that is the pot of research money. It's so tough. And it just eats up money hand over fist, and it's such a shame. The study that you commissioned for the research, central funding research, grants, it's just mind-blowing. 1.8%, I think it is, of central government's money goes towards sight loss. You know, and an even smaller amount of that goes to Usher syndrome. you know, when you start, you know, you're going on economies of scale, it's £9.60 a person. It's probably about £4.80 for, you know, not even that. It's probably 28p, something ridiculous per person in the country goes towards this condition that, you know, as an estimate, over 11,000 people in the UK have this. They're there, they're out there, living, they're all there amongst you. They're there. You know, they, you know, they are there. They're in society doing stuff. They're there. They've got jobs. Believe it or not, blimey, have they? Yes. They're more than capable. They just need a bit of support and they'd rather have, not have this stuff going on, thanks very much.
Do you think for, you know, I know with your personal experience and, you know, it's a theme that's not just common but relentless in this series of podcasts where I'm kind of interested in the world of sight loss. There seems to be this kind of division between whether you want research for treatment or whether you want investment in support for people with sight loss, and in this case with hearing loss as well. I'm finding it difficult to find many people that aren't engaged in the charity world that see there being any separation between wanting to, you know, have it not get worse or to get your sight or hearing back and also wanting to get on with life. That the two things to my mind are inseparable.
Absolutely.
But it feels a little bit in the world like they're to some extent divorced, and I wonder if you have any thoughts on that from Keir Usher's point of view.
The name Keir Usher, I mean, you know, that's our remit, that's what we're after. I think for anybody that establishes any charity, any sort of organisation, even, you know, right down to just doing a fundraising gig, it's for this. It's rooted in your experience, in your authenticity. This is what you want to get from it. That's not to dismiss everything else as to, you know, to say that that's irrelevant or it's not needed that much. Of course, you know, people have their own experience. They have families that, or they may not have families. It's for them, that's their experience. Where our experience is that the feedback that we got from our consultations was that I'm fine, but I'd just rather not have this going on. Can you help? Can you do something about this?
Do you think with degenerative conditions that a cure in inherited degenerative conditions means not just that the individual gets better, but that it stops being passed on through generations, or there's a treatment that prevents it, which is obviously, I think, across the board.
Yeah,
that's the North Star, right?
Yeah,
in that space. But I wonder whether, because for certainly, and it's through my organisation talking to people that have got degenerative eye conditions, the thought of it just stopping as it is on a certain day and not getting worse, so being able to, if you like, plan and live on a steady state is kind of big. And I just wondered given there's two processes of degeneration presumably going on with Usher's, do you think that that is something, not just the recovery of sight, but if you could just stop it getting worse, would that be something that would play out with that community?
Absolutely. Yeah. Certainly, but I mean, that's Joanne nearly says that nearly every day. If we just stop it at this, because Joanne, we're both rapidly approaching our 50s. You know, we've lived the life. You know, we have all that experience. We've navigated through all this, and you know, we've got all those skills in place. You know, we're very adept at, you know, watching Joanne, who's mapped out a very complicated restaurant just to go to the restroom, and honestly, just watching her navigate it with her cane, and she's off. She's just gone. Brilliant. She knows how to do it, and you know, just really confidently, just sets her hips slightly forward, gets that cane down, off she goes. Absolutely brilliant. And you know, so that's fine. If we could just stop it there,
yeah,
that'd be great. Does it change who you are? I suppose it does. Really, it's like you were saying before. You know, if it, any life experience that you are enduring, is that the right word, that you're living through, is it forms who you are.
I think it's, so to my mind, it's a really interesting point, because I genuinely think sight loss has made me a better person.
Uh-huh.
And I think I don't think you get over the fact that it's happening. I think you learn to live with it, and that's where the change comes in.
Exactly.
I think
it's a grief, isn't it?
It is, and very much like grief in the way that you kind of accommodate and adapt to it.
Of course.
But the reason why I say it's made me a better person is because it's pushed me to recognise I live in the context of a community and a family, because I have some dependencies is the wrong word, but I need to rely on people. I need to trust the public in order to function. And, you know, as you were describing there with Jo, however brilliantly she gets to know the restaurant, someone could always leave a chair in the wrong place at a certain time.
All the time.
And you've got to be ready to confront obstacles. And
that's why it's exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is exhausting. I see it in Joanne a lot. I see it in all sorts of other usher people. You know, they're constantly walking into the dishwasher door that's been left open. Or, you know, it's not exclusive to people. You know, people who are fully sighted, fully hearing do this. I walked into a door end on in the half light when I was about 20. I've still got the scar across my eyebrow. You know, people do this stuff. Don't get hung up on it. You know, stuff happens. But it just happens more regularly. And like you say, you know, you have to trust in that human spirit. You know, when you get off that tube, when you get off the train, you get on the train, people are going to see and you're gonna appreciate that, okay, we'll just give this man just a little extra. And that's fine. You know, we luckily, we live in a society that allows for that. You know, we're not that hard-hearted. You know, people are all right, really.
Certainly, that's the experience that we're, you know, people that are supporting us and conversations we're having with people that have got psychiatric conditions, that generally that things can and do go wrong, but generally the intent of the public seems to be there. I think a lot of the time, and a bit, you know, similarly to the conversation about the cane with the red stripes and, you know, just understanding the indicators, there's work to be done in just building an understanding of what it means.
Absolutely.
To live with conditions. And I think with Usher, certainly I'll be motivated from our conversation to think more carefully about how we act to make sure that we're not just make an assumption that we're here for, I'm going to do air quotes, the blind, whatever that is. But that, you know, communities are diverse, experience is diverse.
How do you label stuff? I mean, labelling, what's the obsession at the minute with labelling things? Everything is a journey, isn't it? It's great that people are being recognised and that, you know, you have... I mean, talking to you this morning, this afternoon, has been, you know, it's been a lovely experience because you've made that experience lovely. You've made me feel really comfortable and you've made this environment, you know, welcoming enough for me to, you know, my heart's not racing anymore. I'm not nervous. I'm okay. I'm starting to talk. I'm starting to feel that this is great. I'm enjoying this. That's the challenge, to do that out there, though.
Yeah.
To take that outside. So that those people that are stood in the pub and then me and Joanne walk in don't go, "Ooh, hang on." No, it's just a lady that's got a sight loss and a hearing loss, that's all right. She's still Jo, still, you know, conversely, she's funny as her. Great crack.
Yeah.
Just talk to her. And that's the thing, it's breaking down that barrier, isn't it? Of you know, we must stand aside. We must give the parting of the waves and all the rest of it. No, this involve the public, and that's the challenge, is to involve the public and to inform and educate them, but in an environment, you know, make it a welcoming experience, not a debate, and I'm not telling you this is how it is, pointing fingers and waving and all that. No.
I mean, it's been a really fascinating conversation for me, Stephen, and I hope that people that listen to this can see the energy you're creating from personal experiences.
Thank you.
It's fascinating. So, I mean, perhaps a chance now to talk to the people listening to say just a little bit about what next for Cure Usher.
Well, the big thing that we've managed to, again, it's all part of, you know, happenstance. That's an awful word, but it's just happened that we've managed to secure. We established the very first all-party parliamentary group for Usher syndrome. So we've got a little bit of an in. We've got a foot in the door in the corridors of power where, you know, the people that are in there have this chance to change the way that we live. They change policies. They make things happen. To have that chance to have people to, you know, come forward and express their concerns and what they want out of this chance to talk to parliamentarians and people in that position, it is wonderful. It's been really great. But there's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of engagement and to try and really drill it down to what we actually want out of this. The comedian Henning Bain, I don't know if you know of him, he does a little skit in his routine about charities in the UK. he was really quite shocked that they're a thing. There's no such thing in Germany as a charity, apparently. It's just sorted out. It's just done. Whereas over here, it's down to us to do it, which is good and bad. In a way, it's like a great big consultation. You've got the people right there, like yourself, Joanne. You know, these are people that live with this condition who are at the top, who are calling the shots. So now it's time for us, for these people that live with this condition, to go to the very top, go to the people that make these decisions, that we can persuade those people to further invest in genetic research, but at a central government level, and raise awareness. You know, this is, get into the NHS, tell them what this is, what's the Department of Health and Social Care. Make this part of their remit. We have a voice, and it deserves to be heard. You know, we're a diverse community. So far, it's been crushingly marginalised. It's just been accepted that there you are. You're just stuck in the 1980s. You just keep them there. They're okay. You go and live the best life that you possibly can. That's it. Okay. And there's no change. There's no appetite for change or anything, any furtherment of yourself. It's just support, and that's very static. And I find that really very frustrating. And that's what we're trying to do at Cure Russia, is to try and push that forward.
So I'd urge anyone listening to the podcast, go to the Cure Russia website, pick them up on the socials. We'll put all the links in the notes for this podcast. Steve Moy, if anyone's going to find a route to change for Russia, I can hear it in your voice. So all power to yourself, Joe, and other colleagues. And thank you for joining me this afternoon on the Fight for Sight podcast.
Thank you for listening to Eye Research Matters, brought to you by Fight for Sight and Vision Foundation. To support the work we do and help us change the world for people living with sight loss, please visit visionfoundation.org.uk or fightforsight.org.uk. Finally, we're always keen to reach new members of the sight loss community. So if you'd like to chat with Keith on this podcast, please do get in touch. Thank you.